abuse. Measure 110 funded programs that are now standing up in every single county. People who are on waiting lists are now getting services. Outreach workers are out on the streets. Beds are opening up.
That was Julian Jackson, Director of Movement Building at the Partnership for Safety and Justice. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
Just as so long. Intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
KVD Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. I want to continue a conversation that we started earlier this week, give it additional perspective, and this one coming from the Black Agenda Report, Margaret Kimberly, who is no slouch, no rookie when it comes to political analysis, and more importantly, pulls no punches. So it's straight, no chaser this afternoon. The big story this week, Margaret, has been Donald Trump. And on the surface, it can seem entertaining for some. I mean, how can you avoid it? It's on every news channel. And we're seeing wall-to-wall coverage of his every move. I would have thought by now we would have learned a lesson from what happened in 2016 with the unchallenged and wall-to-wall coverage of mainstream media, but it seems like we've returned to that again. I think you called it Trump deranged syndrome, and maybe you can talk a little bit about that and dissect this, because it's not just media, but if I'm correct, you also look at the complicity of the Democratic Party as well. So welcome to the show, and how you doing?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm doing okay. I'm very busy, but glad to be able to join you. My column in this week's Black Agenda Report is called Trump Derangement Syndrome Returns. Mm-hmm. Trump Derangement Syndrome refers to and I think it comes from the political class of the Democratic Party establishment. In order to keep people in line, in order to keep people from asking them questions, in order to keep people from making demands of this party that is supposed to be the leftish people's party, they point to Trump as a boogeyman. And it started with, Russiagate was its worst form, where they created this phony scandal to absolve themselves of their complicity, their fault in allowing him to get elected in the first place, to keep people from criticizing them, to keep people from making the demands they ought to make. It was all about Trump, such an easy person to caricature as well. So now we're seeing this again. He is an ex-president. He disgraced himself. He hurt himself January 6th. He hurt himself with this documents scandal. Every other president managed to turn over documents when they left the White House except him. His interference in the election, his attempt to undo Biden's election, he had created his own problems. And there's nothing for Democrats to do but leave him alone. But their problem is they have not met the people's needs. So we have a Democrat. Remember when Biden first came into office, we were told he was the most progressive president since FDR. And you had progressives saying, I'll give him an A. And I think that was Pramila Jayapal, and AOC said he exceeded expectations. It was all phony. Nothing done about student loan debt. The child tax credit gone, minimum wage not up. None of the things that people need have been addressed. So you have this distraction about Trump, and you have what I believe to be a manufactured case. The charges against him, this 34-count indictment, all of the crimes, in my opinion, are minor. He paid people to hide information about his personal life. He did not commit any major crime. Actually, as president, he committed the crimes that all of them do. So Bush can invade Iraq. Obama can destroy Libya. Trump can, his sanctions against Venezuela were so terrible, some 40,000 people died. Those are the presidential crimes that remain untouched, for which they have impunity. But if you look at these charges, falsifying business records in New York State can be a felony, but there's a statute of limitations that passed. So they cook up felonies about campaign violations, although the Justice Department said they weren't going to look at those. So this is an effort to get rid of him once and for all, to drive a stake through his heart, to absolve themselves of blame, to distract people from all the things they have not addressed. And I think it's going to come back to bite them. It's not going to keep Trump from running for president. It's not going to dissuade his base from supporting him. The only thing for Democrats to do is to make good on their promises. They don't have to worry about Trump. Instead, we see what I think is corruption. And you don't have to be a Trump supporter to see this. This is something that hurts us, that hurts the progressive left politics. And I think this is going to be their undoing. But I also want to say something else. This is what prosecutors do all the time. They are my least favorite group of people in the country. Mm-hmm. It's why we got 2 million people in jail in this country. They can indict anybody for anything. They overcharge when they want to. And this is often the result, usually of people who don't have Trump's money, who are black or brown. But these prosecutors are not our friend, none of them. Even a black prosecutor in Manhattan, Mr. Bragg, where I live, who has gone back on his promises of not charging minor crime, of not charging bail. He knuckled under to people who attacked him. That's another story. But that's my take overall on this situation.
I appreciate that, Margaret. And, you know, the whole notion of the boogeyman, both parties do it. You know, the boogeyman on the right is crime is increasing. We're bombarded with images of black people stealing or being, you know, carted off to jail. That sort of, you know, if it's not a particular group of people, they'll find a target, you know, going all the way back to the Al Horton days, if that's the name that Bush used. And so that's their boogeyman, to racialize and cause fear that way. And on, as you pointed out, Trump is the boogeyman on the left. But with that being said, how do we kind of circumvent that and keep it moving? Knowing that we have these powerful forces, including the media and others, that are going to keep his name up in lights. Is there a workaround that we can apply, you know, at this moment in time or moving forward?
Well, I think the answer, as always, is to build independent left politics. Electoral politics is not going to save us. In fact, you see black people, for example, member of the Congressional Black Caucus, Jamal Bowman, whose district is in the Bronx in Westchester County. He was outside the courthouse when Trump was arraigned. Marjorie Taylor Greene came. He was shouting at Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, it's all nonsense. The Congressional Black Caucus, the progressives in Congress, they don't do anything. The most important thing for them to do would be to oppose Biden, which they will not do. It's all this progressive label is marketing to keep people on board. We need independent left politics so that Jamal Bowman or any of these other people do not think that they can come up with some BS like this, something performative, instead of doing what they should do to be revolutionary and to oppose the Democratic Party establishment. So we must create independent left political formations. That is what we must do. And we must reject the Democratic Party. It's difficult, I know, for Black people in particular to do that. Black politics now is, it's very sad that it exists only to keep Republicans out of office. And so we, even if they are kept out of office, what do we get? We get more smoke and mirrors. And we see this personified in the reaction to Trump being charged.
The notion of leaving, as you mentioned, Margaret, is difficult because many people may not have the same goals, as you stated. Many people may not want to be revolutionary. Many people just want to have the creature comforts of society. I just want to have enough food on the table, a roof over my head, and be able to maybe, you know, go down to dinner, you know, once every so often with my spouse and not have to feel like I'm going to break the bank. How do we appeal to that particular audience and that crowd? Is there a workaround or a path that we could at least try to nudge people towards, knowing that the attraction to staying connected to the Democratic Party is to get some sort of to extract some sort of goods? You know, it may seem minor, but it may be major to them.
Well, I, you know, the creature comforts, as you call them, are getting rarer and rarer. The living wage work is, it's less and less likely that people will have that. People live on the edge, manage. So if you have living wage work and if you save your money and if you don't get in too much debt, you might be okay. But then again, you could get laid off. And is there a safety net? So even when we're comfortable, especially Black people, we're never really comfortable. If one thing goes wrong, we are in a lot of trouble financially. We don't have the generational wealth. We don't have anything to fall back on. We start from scratch in our adult lives. So I would argue, first of all, that even when we quote unquote have it good, we still don't have it good. And we're settling for nothing, really. Do you remember a few months ago when Biden, before the midterms, he made this big announcement about pardoning people with marijuana convictions, federal marijuana convictions?
I remember that.
Well, first of all, very few who were convicted just of possession. Very few people convicted only of possession. So few, in fact, that there is no one, not one person in federal incarceration in that category. So he freed nobody from jail. It doesn't even expunge records. So it literally did, and it took them months to come up with the process for people who wanted to go through this pardon process. That's the kind of thing that we get from Democrats, Biden in particular. So we have no regulation of it could be the airlines or the railroad workers who were stabbed in the back. They kept them from going on strike. Right. And getting them paid sick leave was a matter of an executive order. It was entirely within Biden's control. He didn't have to go to Congress. He could have done it himself. And that's the kind of thing we get with Democrats instead of Republicans. Yes, Republicans are the avowed racist party. And Trump in particular appealed directly to white racism. And that is not a small thing. I am not ignoring that. However, the alternative is what? People who don't do that, but at the first sign of trouble, run for cover. So when Republicans start this drumbeat, as you just pointed out, about crime, Democrats cave in all the time. So I think it's time for us to point out what we really get, what we do get, what we don't get from Democrats, so we can start to lose some of our fear and gather up a little courage to say no to what are hoaxes and scams.
Margaret Kimberly from Black Agenda Report is our guest this afternoon. Let's talk about Alvin Briggs for a minute. He's part of a wave of what many have dubbed progressive district attorneys, or at least attorneys, district attorneys that are going to have a social justice outlook. And the argument has been made that really politics starts locally. So there's a lot of people, a lot of young folks who went out and campaigned and got this guy in office. What should we be pushing him to do? What, I don't know if prosecuting Trump was, you know, was the goal when he was elected. I think more or less that you wanted to hold, at the very least, police, rogue police accountable. And that's why you wanted to have these district attorneys in place, so that we wouldn't have shooting after shooting and killing after killing and cops just walking away free. But at this point in time, if he was sitting in front of you, what would you be directing him to do at this point in time? And what should we be pressuring somebody like him and others to do at this point?
Well, I live in Manhattan. Alvin Bragg is my district attorney, and I voted for him. I would be pressing him to do what he said he was going to do. He said he was going to minimize requests for bail. Cash bail is a terrible system that monetizes the criminal justice system, that takes money from poor people or forces them to go to jail just because they don't have money. Most people in the country have heard of Rikers Island. It is the main jail in New York City, and people spend months or even years there just because they don't have money to pay bail. And that was the sort of thing that Bragg said he was going to do away with. But he was immediately attacked, including by our Black mayor, the horrible Eric Adams. He and his Black police chief, all the two of them, attacked Bragg very publicly. The police commissioner, she even wrote an email to every cop and said they were unsafe because of Alvin Bragg's policy.
Wait.
Yes.
Wait.
Yes.
No.
I couldn't make that up.
You have to be making it up.
No, I am not. Her name is Keechant Sewell, I believe, right. Is the police commissioner of the NYPD. And in order, Bragg wrote a memo to his staff saying, we're going to minimize charging people with felonies. We're going to minimize asking for bail. And he was attacked in the New York Post, the Rupert Murdoch paper here, the Fox News paper here, led the attack. And the Black mayor and Black police chief attacked him. And she sent an email to every cop in New York City saying that Alvin Bragg made them unsafe, and he immediately retreated. So that is the kind of thing that is happening in New York. Bragg needs to do what he said he was going to do. And last year he was saying there was no case against Trump. And so they, the Democratic Party establishment, got to him. I think that's the only way to put it, in order to have what I think is a BS prosecution of a minor crime. And this is what prosecutors do. They do it all the time. That's why we have 2 million people in jail in this country. They find something to charge you with. Most people can't fight it. Most people don't even go to trial, just take a plea, right, and don't risk getting more jail time. It's something that should be a national scandal, except this time they targeted Trump. And they want to get rid of Trump. They don't want him to run for president again. They're afraid he could win. And the Democrats, the way they get rid of Trump is do what you said you were going to do. Serve the people. Live up to the principles that the Democratic Party is supposed to live by. Then you don't have to worry about Trump. He wouldn't be an issue.
Do you think it's that they want to get rid of him? Because the calculation before, when the 2016 election was to get him to run because he could be defeated, is what Hillary and her crew thought. And as you said, because you didn't meet the needs of the people, it was found to be otherwise. But he generates money. He generates money for his campaign. He generates money for these outlets. He's probably generating money for the Democratic Party, because in theory, people would look and say, the boogeyman, let's give money and support. I think they want him around, you know, especially when you look at the fact that if there's going to be a trial, it's going to start right smack dab when the campaigning is going to start, when you're starting to have your first primaries, because it's going to be happening in January. So the timing of this seems to be calculated. Maybe we can murky him up, you know, quotations around the word murky, in the middle of the primary. But I think it's, you know, as you said, it's not going to amount to anything, but maybe it might motivate a lot of people to come out and vote. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm on your page with that, but that seems to be a plan of action from where I sit.
Well, as you were correct in pointing out that Hillary Clinton, one of the things WikiLeaks revealed is that they had this, they called it the Pied Piper strategy, and they should elevate the people they thought had the worst chance of winning, and Trump was one of them. But they haven't learned anything. And I believe that's because the oligarchs who run the Democratic Party are not going to behave differently and then the way they have been behaving, because they don't want a Build Back Better bill. They don't want to help people in all the ways that I've mentioned. They do not want that to happen. So they are caught in a bind of marketing themselves as being some sort of alternative to the Republicans when they really are not. So all they have is scams and shams, and Trump is a part of that. But I think they've forgotten. They didn't think he was going to win in 2016. And they're doing the same thing. Trump got 70 million votes in 2020. He got 10 million more votes in 2020 than he got in 2016. There are millions of people who would vote for Trump anyway. And also, they're just increasing cynicism, because there are many people who see that this is a political prosecution. They may not even be Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. So that could decrease turnout. It could decrease the effect of them thinking you've got to get out and keep Trump out of office. When people see this political prosecution.
Real talk. Margaret, we appreciate you taking time out. I want to just, if you have a couple of minutes, you know, Margaret Kimberly from Black Agenda Report is the editor-in-chief. You should check out that publication if you're not familiar with it. It is keen analysis from the Black left. Something that was kind of a distraction. Well, there were several things that were distractions with the Trump circus. One was the, you know, thousands of kids that came out to protest in Tennessee around gun violence, and, you know, and the fight to remove, you know, three Democrats from office, and a power grab similar to, well, I wouldn't say similar, but kind of akin to what you're seeing in Jackson with, you know, just arbitrarily taking over a system and running it. So that was a distraction. But the other thing that you wrote in your last column, what was going on internationally, and maybe you could just kind of give a summary of it, because I thought that should be something on everybody's plate, which is regarding the anti-gay bill that was passed in Uganda. But you pointed out in your column that, you know, a lot of those anti-LGBT bills are pushed by white evangelicals from here, and the distraction around that kind of covers up the war crimes that are going on in the Congo with U.S. backing and having Uganda as the point of the spear. Can you kind of break that down for us a little?
Sure. I want to say, first of all, that I oppose, I shouldn't have to say it, but I will. I oppose this these attacks on LGBTQ people in Uganda and anywhere else in the world. But as you say, there are evangelical groups who are tied to the U.S. government, who are very powerful in Uganda, who influence this kind of legislation. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, Uganda is guilty of far worse. Uganda and Rwanda, both U.S. allies, both of which received millions of dollars in military and other foreign aid, created this militia group called M23, who invade neighboring Congo. Congo has more resources, I think, than any other country in the world. Congo has diamonds, gold, the cobalt and coltan that we need for electronic devices. And they regularly pillage the Congo, steal these resources, kill millions of, literally millions of people in the late 90s and early 00s. 6 million Congolese died in these wars that were instigated by Uganda and Rwanda. So it is interesting that the anti-gay bill gets a lot of attention. I'm not saying it shouldn't get any, but Uganda's true crimes are hidden because they are done on behalf of the U.S. The U.S. and European and Canadian interests want to keep Congo destabilized, to make sure that they can keep crooked people in power and secure these resources for their corporations. And Uganda and Rwanda help them to do that. But this is something, unless you read Black Agenda Report, you don't know anything about. So I thought it was important to remind people why they should oppose the Ugandan government and what it is that they do that should be elevated to people's consciousness and should be opposed.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing is that sometimes when things are sensationalized, then when you end that sensation, you're just so relieved that you kind of give them a pass on everything. So let's say there's outrage and you do defeat, or you get Uganda to maybe change its mind or lessen the harshness of this anti-gay bill, you're so exhausted and you're like, whoo, we did our work. And meanwhile, millions are still being killed in the Congo, you know, because that is just like, oh man, we can't fight that one too. You kind of give people a pass. It's almost like with the Trump thing. If you do get rid of Trump, then you're going to forget, like, oh yeah, we didn't get that student forgiveness bill passed, or we didn't have any sort of immigration reform, or we didn't, you know, lessen jail times. All these different types of things that we also should be fighting for just go to the wayside, and we're just so happy that we got rid of the gleaming thing that was put before us and oftentimes done so to be a distraction. So I'm glad that you're able to break down and give us a larger picture that, so when we do fight, we know that hitting somebody in the mouth is not enough. We got to completely knock them out.
Yes, we do. And it's the system that needs to be changed and knocked out. And I know that's a heavy lift, but that's the truth of it. And I think the beginning of strategizing and finding ways to change the system, it starts with saying that we need to change the system, starting with those simple words. Stop talking about defending democracy and Trump is hurting American democracy. We don't have democracy. We have a system where the voters are the last ones to come into the process. Rich people get in a smoke-filled room. They decide who you're going to be able to vote for, and because they pick people who they know aren't really going to do anything for you. So I think we first begin with telling the truth about how this system works. And by the way, I did a quick search of the article I wrote about Eric Adams and his police commissioner, and I called it Eric Adams Black on Black Crime, which was in Black Agenda Report, February of 2022. And I hope people look it up.
Remember when Eric was back in the days, he was kind of somewhat a hero. At least I was a kid back then when he was heading up the Black Police Officers Association. And so what happened to that guy? Because his name was touted. He seemed like, you know, maybe I was too young to maybe have a real sharp political analysis. But I remember, you know, people were saying like, yeah, Adams is good. He's giving him hell, you know, and he heads up the Black Policemen's Union. And then, you know, he's ascended to Brooklyn Borough President and all that. And now he's kind of like, you know, like, what happened?
Well, it seems it's pretty clear. He had political ambitions all along. Mm. And he used us. He used Black people. He was a police officer, but he would talk about needing to reform the police. He talked about being beaten by the police himself when he was a teenager. And that's the sort of thing that got him political support. But he's just dishonest, just a cynic who used us and our legitimate concerns to create an image for himself that was not true. So now that he's mayor, he talks all the time about having to help the police, and he's still a cop, and cop, 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 and crime is a problem. So he lied. He lied in order to begin winning office. He was a state senator, then the Brooklyn Borough president, and then mayor. Mm-hmm. And he is the worst mayor I've lived in New York City since the late 80s. He is the worst in every worse than Giuliani, worse than
Rudy.
Well, yes, you know, it seems like they get worse. It's like Bloomberg was worse than Giuliani, in fact. Right. And then Adams is even worse. His police commissioner is, when cops are brought up on, rarely when it happens, brought up on disciplinary charges, she doesn't fire them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's wow. Terrible. It's terrible. They do the opposite of what Black people want.
Margaret, as we go, let people know how they should tap into Black Agenda Report, and also give our listeners marching orders. I know you talked about we need to, you know, get rid of the system. What do we replace it with? What should people be, you know, building, you know, ideally from your perspective? And are there a couple of steps that they should be taking right now, you know, as soon as this interview is over, to move us in that direction?
Well, you can read Black Agenda Report at blackagendareport.com. We have a new issue every Wednesday online. It's at BLK Agenda Report on Twitter, at BLK Agenda Report. I'm on Twitter. Freedom Ride Blog is my handle. And I think we have to join an organization, as the revolutionaries from the days of liberation movement told us. I'm also active with Black Alliance for Peace, mm-hmm. blackallianceforpeace.com. And we talk about the connections between the domestic and the international, and that you cannot separate them, that a country that practices aggression against the rest of the world will do the same to its people. And we are fighting a war, and it is a war against Black people all over the world. So that is an example of an organization, and people who are not African descended can join the Black Alliance for Peace Solidarity Network. But I think it's important, first of all, to be truthful with ourselves and just to accept that this system, as it is constructed now, will not benefit us, and to start from just speaking that truth. And I think that will lead us in the right direction.
Margaret Kimberly, Black Agenda Report, want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Trump indicted. The news that former U.S. President Donald J. Trump was indicted by a New York grand jury related to the Stormy Daniels controversy hit like a thunderclap. Few saw it coming, especially after earlier news accounts reported the grand jury would essentially take the month of April off. But what a difference a day makes. Once again, Trump made history again. formerly the first president to be twice impeached, now becomes president ever indicted criminally. Who knows what will happen? No one does. Doubtless, his lawyers will mount a serious challenge to the statute of limitations and other legal theories. So, stay tuned, because it ain't over at indictment. Because indictment is just a charge. We shall see. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
On the move. I want to thank Mr. Louis Farrakhan and the millions more for the kind invitation to join y'all here. As we gather in person or electronically, we do so in a time of peril. We do so in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the state showed us all that they don't give a damn about black lives.
The angry leaders that frame Mumia are the same names blamed for Hurricane Katrina. See, the levees would break, the waters would crush, and President Bush, he would forsake the poor and oppressed. So just from the smaller Katrinas, we experience a deadly effects in all arenas. Every year, public schools miseducate the poor, destroying any chance to advance and get more, man. Taxes pay for the oppression we experience. Police too brutal for me to mention, it gets really tense. Consumers of the media filled with ignorance, poisoning our minds with gimmicks and violent images. The daily hurricanes of hate and indifference, experience behind the prison gate on some... The courthouse laws and rules they reveal are threats to our welfare and not tools of our will. So just
but every day of our lives we see small but no less lethal Hurricane Katrinas. Every year in public schools, millions of black, Latino, and poor kids are miseducated, thereby destroying, as surely as any hurricane, their life hopes and chance.
We need the boom in the millions to bring true social power to civilians. Don't gotta swallow the from the one that you follow and free your mind from the mud that you wallow in. Hey, from the confusion of social repression and destitution, there is only one solution to this intrusion. The movement of millions to bring forth a revolution. Now who's in? Those engaged in the struggle for freedom and justice and the liberation of political prisoners. We need those dedicated to change so that rich and poor children are educated the same. Yeah, we need the movement to resist the fraction that brought you patriot acts but not patriotic actions. We need the movement that ignites, not divides us, despite all the trauma, cause my people are survivors.
We need a movement of millions to build true social power, to free our minds and our bodies from the mud that we languish in. We need a movement of millions to transform our current social reality of repression and destitution. We need a movement of millions to bring back light to the eyes of our people, to engage in a struggle for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. We need a movement of millions of the poor, of workers, of women, of youth, of students, of prisoners, of all those dedicated to change, to build independent organizations that can't be bought or sold, and will do the work necessary to be free.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we'll hear from Noel Hanrahan, the director of Prison Radio, a multimedia production studio that brings to the public the voices of incarcerated men, women, and children. Noel will provide an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal's legal case. Stay tuned.
So I can just talk in generalities because I don't know specifically what Mumia's legal team, Sam Spital from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Judith Ritter, and Brett Grody from Abolish the Law Center are going to do. I will see Mumia very soon, and so I could ask him as well. But generally what happens is that this trial court judge's ruling would be appealed to the Superior Court. That would have happened whether we had won or whether we had lost. So it will immediately go to the Superior Court. The Superior Court has been taking quite a long time on some of these cases. You know, definitely over 6 months. They've taken up to 18 months. So that really puts it in a holding pattern. Once the Superior Court rules, then it can be appealed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is another delay. That's, time is our enemy in that way. Time is our enemy in this regard. I don't know whether he can appeal this federally, like a federal habeas corpus, which then is another track that takes time. In order to preserve your ability to file a federal habeas, you have to have filed something already and put it on hold. So I'm not sure if he's preserved that right, but we should ask people. So I see that we have, and this set of appeals would have happened if we had won, right? So the time delay and the FOP's strategies would have been enacted. It was just the other side that would have done it. And so they would have delayed to the Superior Court. They would have delayed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. They would have filed another King's Bench petition to remove Krasner. They would have tried to insert a new lawyer from the Attorney General's office in, et cetera, et cetera. So we would have been facing this delay almost no matter what. So I would have to say that it's really the people power. It is literally the people power that's going to make the court accountable. It's that nexus. When there is enough overall support, when there's enough political power that's built by the people on a grassroots level, that's what's going to tip the balance, because the courts always do what is needed to be done when they feel the pressure, when they feel the political pressure. There are other options that Mumia is going to have to take, and those include going to the conviction integrity unit. Now, the problem with going to the conviction integrity unit is that they very rarely give up people, very rarely, though they do occasionally. And the other thing is, even if Krasner goes to a Philadelphia court and says he wants to drop the charges, the Philadelphia courts, this level of court, has not privileged. He's done it for other cases and they have said no to him. So DA Krasner in this jurisdiction doesn't have the ability to just drop the charges. It has to be confirmed by someone like Lucretia Clemens. Lucretia Clemens is probably going to keep this case. It's still going to be her case if it ever comes back. So she will be the one who will be denying Krasner the ability to take a different stand if a CIU, for instance, comes through for him or that petition works. The other thing that he'll be able to do, and he should start now, are the clemency petitions. And that would go to somebody like the governor. Now, the governor, Josh Shapiro, has presidential aspirations. And so Shapiro was never someone we thought was going to privilege a Mumia Abu-Jamal clemency petition, but the governor of Pennsylvania is the person that can actually grant that. Only a state governor can grant a clemency petition. Then Mumia, because he's old and he has many health problems, at some point will probably need to do a compassionate release petition. And that would be if his health deteriorates. So those are the potential avenues, and time is the delay. But honestly, they weren't going to give us anything unless we were going to be able to fight for it. We will reach the point of victory and Mumia's freedom when the people are strong enough to demand that the courts do the right thing. It would never have been internally to the courts. They're not going to police themselves. Their interest in preserving the Juanita Kidd Injustice Center and the assembly line of Black and brown bodies through Pennsylvania courts is too much in their self-interest or their worldview. They're not liberals, they're extreme right-wing people. Let us
ha, hey, ha, 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 knock radio, east, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping hard knock radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's it's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Black folk. Black look like a revolution. Look like a family reunion in the park. Black look like it's a different world. Sound like a crawfish ball in New Orleans. Black folk joke around like Martin and got paintings from JJ in the living room. It sounds strong. Look like sacrifice. It'd be flowers blooming in the summertime. Black sound like old songs. Smell like good food. And it tastes like heart disease, but it feel like maize at Jazz Fest. Black sound like something that hurt, like a hard test. Black sound like skin, like something dark. It look like hair, yeah, black sound like rough hair and good hair. Look like history, sound spiritual. Black sound like years, like working, like night. Black sound like money, look like Walmart, like corner stores, like cash register singing. Black sound like 400 years. Smell like Oprah. Impactful like Martin. Look like Cicely Tyson. Sing like Nina. Got a like Serena. Feel like broken homes in Section 8. Black smell like crack and collard greens. Sounds motivational. Feels like church. Look like big Sunday hats and ribbons.
Smile like your mom. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. Fly like your daddy, make me so happy. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one.
Sound like Thick Plat swinging and sneaky uncles. Look like Tyler Perry making money. Sound like hating, feel frustrated, don't it? Like they don't get it, like they won't ever get it, huh? Like, push your personal feelings of racial injustice so far underneath the carpet that you trip over your own family history. But I love me some black folk. I love the hair grease and the rental fees, the front row seats, the police, the projects, the mustard greens, being late, social security checks, government assistance, bougie black looking good, bags of hair, fake press on nails, rat tail combs, stunting gold chain, gold teeth, black men and big feet. I love me some black folk. For they are the people that were made from the darkest parts of the sky.
Smile like your mama, eyes like the sun. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. Fly like your daddy, make me so happy. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. I'm in a place when I see your face. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Black don't crack, I love your skin. I don't see that from other kin. Yesterday, any day, I see me and mine doing different things. Pushing boundaries, west coast, east coast, overseas.
From the 504. to thank, I came to L.A. for.
Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for? Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for? Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for?
Down at Hard Knock Radio. Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Ain't nothing they made, they beats trying to eat till they belly from the steel gray beef. Say, please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say, some peace to their lovers, I lay with a piece. Make some shade on your name in the street. Go, hey, it ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go.
Bank pants stacking down, and I laugh at frowns. What they mad about? Cause it promised
with this mass account that didn't wear a cap and gown. Are you mad cause the judge ain't give me more time? And when I tip,
let
ha,
hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Top, Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. Earth law is often called ecocentric. It is an emerging body of law for protecting, restoring, and stabilizing the functional interdependency of Earth's life and life support systems. In other words, Earth law lets nature operate naturally. It may be expressed in constitutional, statutory, common, or customary law, as well as in treaties and other agreements, both public and private. Earth law is both a departure from environmental law and a new context for its extension. It is considered ecocentric law, not anthropocentric law, an alternative to the divine rights of man. Within the framework of Earth law is the idea that ecosystems have the right to exist, thrive, and evolve, and that nature should be able to defend those rights in court, just like people do. Some of the other specific movements falling under the banner of Earth law are rights for animals, ecocide as a crime, and indigenous rights. Earth law has been used to establish legal rights for natural entities, such as rivers and other marine protected areas. In October 2022, in an article in PLOS Biology, an academic journal, a group of researchers called for the protections of Earth law to be extended to the full ocean as an integrated ecosystem with intrinsic worth that provides incalculable resource value to all living entities on Earth, presently at risk of exhaustion by consumption without sustainable protection and practice. Dr. Mary Christina Wood from the University of Oregon, in her 2014 book, Nature's Trust, Environmental Law for a New Ecological Age, Cambridge University Press, describes a public trust doctrine, an historical principle that holds that government respects all nature, all terrestrial and marine resources, as a sovereign trust for the public. And to license the exhaustion of those resources through consumption and pollution is a violation of nature's fundamental rights and is illegal. Court cases brought by environmentalists based on this argument have been decided favorably, up to the Supreme Court. The fossil fuel industry is the highest expression of the concept. By its unlimited consumption of oil and gas and coal, by its cynical opposition to alternative technologies, the industry has perpetrated the greatest transfer of wealth ever. Assets owned by the public transfer to private corporations and shareholders without compensation. That this transfer has been abetted by government, by subsidies, credits, abatements, and research grants, and further, that the cost of the external consequence has been passed on to the public as toxins, emissions, acidification, poisoned water, extreme weather, climate refugees, resource wars, and many other negative, now visible impacts on human health, peace, and peace of mind adds an unforgivable, ironic dimension to this history. There ought to be a law. Nature is sometimes portrayed as violent, unforgiving chaos. Survival of the fittest is one measure of systemic success. But it's also a place of astonishing harmony, diversity, integrity, and beauty that maintains balance, promotes life, and assures its future. It is continuity and sustainability contained, a dynamic, endemic force that transcends the boundaries and pretenses of our ambition. To break this order, especially with premeditation, is a crime against both nature and humanity. Order is maintained by law. Disorder is promoted by indifference to regulation and the common good. How do we protect nature, and thus ourselves, from this self-harm and chaos? Earth law is an answer, a penultimate treaty, an agreement equal to the guarantees of the essential rights of man. It entails pure democracy, all things equal, as if all men and all natural things have a mutual right to endure for the common benefit of all. Any one of us can stand, even in the midst of devastation and ruin, and find solace, resilience, and hope in things that manifest the laws of nature. There is order to be found before our very eyes, if we look, and by such recognitions we can ratify a collective treaty, a utilitarian commitment to ourselves, our neighbors, even to strangers, toward a transformational reorder of values and behaviors. In such moments, no matter who, where, or when, in those moments, together, we hold the tools and the possibility of rescue in our hands. R for renewal, E for environment, S for society, C for collaboration, U for understanding, and E for engagement. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
This is
KBOO Portland.
You.